Hello, Columbus, Chattahoochee Valley, all my friends down near the Florida-Georgia line, South Georgia, South Alabama. How y'all doing today? This is Teddy Reese with Sunday Conversation. Today is Sunday, September the 16th, 2018. I hope everyone's having a good day. I hope you're staying dry out there. You know, the weather is a little wet, but we'll be all right. We'll get through it. Just got to stay strong here. As we proceed throughout the rest of the show today, I just want to say that I'm excited about today's show. I have a guest here that all of us have pretty much known for a while. I mean, she's been all over the place and done so much for so many different people. And it's kind of bittersweet because, you know, this will most likely be our last interview with this individual in this capacity. So let me stop with the suspense and just go ahead and let you guys know so you can join me in excitement, but slight sadness too, that this is our last interview. We have our mayor with us, Mayor Teresa Tomlinson. How are you today?
Hey, Teddy, I'm doing good. It's good to have a conversation with you any day, but particularly on a Sunday.
You know, I appreciate that. I really, really do. And thank you for taking time out to be here. Let's go ahead and jump right to it. I mean, yeah. We are getting close to the end of your term.
I know. Yes. Eight full years.
3 months left?
Yeah. It's my last day, not that I'm counting, is Tuesday. I think that's January 8th. Tuesday, January 8th at 9:15 will be when the other mayor, the new mayor, Mayor-elect Skip Henderson, will be sworn in.
Now, have you started packing up yet?
Yes.
Oh, no. You got to wait until the
I've cleaned out all the drawers of all the furniture, my office. I started going through the file cabinets today and, you know, just leaving, of course, those things that the mayor-elect might need and the things that are duplicates, you know, that other departments have, clearing those out so he has some room. Right. Just organizing things. And, yeah, you know, it's exciting. I'll tell you, it's bittersweet for me, too. I mean, this has been a joyous run here, and it really has. I've met thousands and thousands of people I would have never have met, got to share in their lives. And, you know, otherwise we tend to stay in our little worlds with our friends and our little neighbors. Right. And being mayor is really a joy. You get to worship with people. You get to, you know, partake in community events that you would normally not go to, you know, and so that's been wonderful. It absolutely does. It broadens your world, and that's one of the beautiful things about it. So I'm gonna miss the folks. At the same time, I had some high school students. They were juniors, rising seniors, and they were interns in my office this summer. And one of them said, "Are you going to be sad to leave the mayor's office?"
Well, that was my question.
And I said, "Well, let me put it this way. I said, you guys have really liked going to the football games at high school, hadn't you?" And they said, "Oh, yeah." "And you liked going to your junior prom, didn't you?" And I, "Oh, yeah." "And you liked all your teachers?" "Oh, yeah." And I said, "But you're going to be happy to graduate, aren't you?" And they're like, "Oh, yeah." So I'm happy to graduate.
Well, you know, I moved here in March of 2013. So
wow, yeah.
You're the only mayor that I've ever known.
Yeah.
I mean, and of course, you know, myself and others participated in
your
2014 campaign. And
thank you.
It was important to us as young professionals. One, because one thing I appreciate about the administration that you've had and something that I hope transition to Mayor-elect Skip Henderson, in which, you know, contrary to politics as we know it, people would think that Skip and I personally would have a bad relationship.
Right, right.
But we actually have a very good relationship.
Sure, yeah.
You know, sat beside each other just last week at a community forum, and I saw him this week at a couple events, and there are some things we're going to work on together. But you were very open to young professionals.
Yeah.
You were very engaged with us. You got us engaged in government. And that's something that we rarely see from other elected officials. Not, you know, calling anyone out, but this is just general feedback, constructive feedback from other young professionals that want to get involved. I mean, you plugged a lot of people into committees, let them see personally how their government interacts, how to interact with their government, how government works, you know, to the minute levels. Why did you feel that was important?
I really wanted everybody to have direct access to their mayor. I feel that's critically important to empower each person so that you don't have to be dependent dependent on a political surrogate. A typical, you know, sort of an old small town way of doing things, right? Like Mayberry or, you know, the old Bainbridge, the old Macon, the old Columbus was, if you have 70,000 people, let's say, in your city, you can operate politically through surrogates.
Right.
And those are going to be sort of the grand dam of the neighborhood, you know, of a particular area, a minister, perhaps, the top three employers, the head of the utilities, and the head of the bank. You get those three people, those five, six, seven people in a room, and they agree with the mayor, then you just boogie on. And individual thoughts, you know, you figure out later. Mm-hmm. Because the surrogates go back to their particular constituents and just say, hey, we're going to all support this SPLOST. We're going to all support this particular endeavor. Well, once your city gets to be 200,000 people, mm-hmm. once it becomes as we did, have a major demographic transition, we became a majority, a minority-majority community, people expect to have input. They expect to have a direct effect on their government and for their government to respond to them, particularly
Absolutely.
In this
Absolutely.
Era of social media mm-hmm. where people are connected. They can go get their own information. They don't have to be spoon-fed like they did in the 60s, 70s. And, you know, when there were people that maybe hadn't gone to school, hadn't, you know, gotten out of the eighth grade, as, you know, mm-hmm. some of our mm-hmm. grandmothers and grandfathers mm-hmm.
right.
had, you
Absolutely.
Know, and they had to have people explain things to them. Well, that's really not our reality anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody's capable of understanding whether or not that road needs a speed bump or you know, this mm-hmm. Tax needs to be passed. And so I really wanted to step into this new era. You know, the prior two mayors were actually from the generation, we forget, everybody's familiar with the baby boomer mm-hmm. generation, right? Well, the generation before that was called traditionalists. People born before, I think it's 1944, and they're called the traditional. So our prior two mayors had actually been from the traditionalist generation, and we leapt forward from two traditionalist generation mayors to a Gen X mayor.
Right.
And so that really did catapult us mm-hmm. into a new era, a new perspective.
And I think it's kind of molded expectation, at least of the mayoral office
mm-hmm.
for so many people in this city, which you know, and I've shared this with Skip. I think this is going to be something that I really hope he don't drop the ball on is continuing the access that you have started. You know, even the social media interaction
mm-hmm.
and how you would engage citizens and have conversations, that's important to this newer generation. That's important to the next generation of leaders.
I think it keeps stability. I mean, you know, I was very interested and proud of the fact that we were going to be transitioning from to a minority-majority community mm-hmm. during my tenure. That's one of the reasons I ran. That can be a time of great civic upheaval
mm-hmm.
as people feel like, you know, hey, wait now, we've been waiting a heck of a long time and we don't see the love and
mm-hmm.
the respect.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people are unsure what this new world looks like, so they tend to move out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we saw this in Macon and so many other communities when they made that transition.
Right.
And the thing is, you
and
have to...
I was
to,
in the Macon area when Jack Ellis became the
exactly.
first minority mayor.
And it can really be... like I said, a time of civic upheaval.
Mm-hmm.
And so you needed someone, I thought, and am so glad to have been there for this, that believed that this was a great thing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
in the bottom of my heart, I believe and continue to believe it was a great and exciting thing
mm-hmm.
and convey that and yet have a steady hand on the wheel to say, it's going to be all right for who you are, and it's guess what? It's also going to be all right for who you are.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do this amazing thing together, and we did. And you know, people, I have to remind people of that all the time.
Right.
There's no civic conversation about the fact that Columbus became a minority-majority community.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always the one bringing it up, and the reason why is because when you're a leader and something happens and it goes well, when there's no quote-unquote disaster, everybody takes it for granted. I mean, you know, it's like it never had, like it was
right.
never an issue,
right.
never
right.
a challenge.
It's almost like a company that doesn't consult an attorney or have in-house counsel and constantly writing contracts, and it's not an issue until a contract is challenged.
Right, right.
And then you realize, oh, I should have had a lawyer. You know, but
well,
there's no rut-roll. Exactly. And so you think everything's fine. But I think it's important that we highlighted that as you did, because there were people watching and listening.
Yes.
And wanted to know that was happening. And you know, the sad thing in all of this, in my opinion, is that we should have always operated with everyone's interest being important and mm-hmm. everyone's interest being at the forefront, and it shouldn't require a shift in geographical makeup, if you will, and demographical makeup, I should say, of the city for interest to really be prevalent. And I think something important that you just said was you were here during that transition, which means that you were carrying that message before the transition happened.
Yes.
And you took that message the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a consistent message, and it was a message that of the community as a whole bought into. I mean, you know, you had two elections with no problem, really.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, even in your first election, you ran against a sitting councilor
mm-hmm.
and some other individuals that were well known
absolutely.
In the political
arena. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think I tried to run, you know, with just a candor about difficult things. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many people, consultants, that will tell you, well, don't say that, and, you know, kind of smooth over this. Look, people know. Mm-hmm. They know what the issues are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the old way, the outdated, I mean, just to get real, the outdated way for, you know, sort of someone with a more historic or let's say traditional view of the world was to say, okay, well, what we're going to do is we're going to placate the minority community mm-hmm. and not make them mad at us, right? Right. We're going to keep doing things the way we feel comfortable doing it,
right.
And then we're just going to throw the periodic bone to the minority community, and we're going to keep them happy with us. Or they work through surrogates. They have 4, 5, 6 people they keep happy, and they count on those 4, 5, 6 people to keep the masses happy. Okay, I believe personally that is completely destabilizing. Mm-hmm. I think it is pejorative. I think it is condescending. I think it is just so outdated and so irrelevant that it is a total waste of our time to even talk about that. And so why don't we do this? Why don't we act like we have 200,000 citizens mm-hmm. and give them all equal access
absolutely.
And respect, and let's do it like that and see what happens. And in a way, it opens it wide, you know, mm-hmm. And that's what scares some people, right? They don't know how
it
they can govern all that wide.
Exactly.
But to me, it's so exciting because look at all the possibilities. Look at all the people now that care,
absolutely.
You know?
And you got to realize, though, that people, you're going to always have folks that don't agree with you when you're in some
oh, sure.
capacity.
Yeah.
You know, some decision is not going to be a way a certain person would have made that decision. But I think when you approach it the way that you just, you know, so beautifully described it, then it allows the masses as a whole to see why you made that decision, make their own determination as to why that decision was made, and respond appropriately.
Yeah. Well, it can seem to some more chaotic, right? And if you've ever heard me give a speech about leadership, I always talk about you have to, there are certain issues, you have to go through the controversy. Mm-hmm. You have to go through the choppy water to get to the calm on the other side. You have to. Mm-hmm. If you don't, it's illegitimate.
Right.
People don't feel like they've had process. They don't feel like they've had the conversation. So you have to be a leader that is perfectly willing, if necessary, to open yourself to controversy. And one of the things I run into wonderful people in the community, and they're like, Mayor Thompson, I think you've done such a great job, even though all my friends talk bad about you all the time. And you know, the truth of it is, look, those folks or other folks, if it wasn't those 10 friends of yours, then it'd be 10 friends of somebody else would be talking smack about somebody mm-hmm. who's in leadership. Mm-hmm. That is a part of it. But you know, the thing that we did do was we opened it wide so that conversation took place in public and before mm-hmm. everyone else, instead of whispers and disgruntlement. Everybody in this city, I truly believe, feels they had their say
right.
about my leadership, whether it was at a Let's Talk, whether they ripped it off on Facebook or sent me an email, a private message, because as you know, I respond to all my own private
right.
messages, all those own Facebook comments. That's me. That's not somebody in the office coming up with that. So you don't get that generic, you know, I've had some people say, I can't believe the mayor talks like this, right? Because I'd say, you know, thank you, Joe, for your comment, but you have no idea what you're talking about because that didn't happen here in in Columbus, or, you know, whatever it is.
Misinformed.
Yeah, you're misinformed, right? And people be like, I can't believe you just said that. Well, you know, it's the truth.
It's the truth.
So let's move on.
It's the truth. Let's move on. You know, and one last question, and we'll take a quick break before we transition on. But, you know, I've never been elected mayor or anything of that nature. But my last year in law school, as I sit here in my law review shirt, I was elected the national chair of the ABA Law Student Division, which means I was the face and voice for 179,000 law students. I'm in charge of a $2.5 million budget, and I represented every law student all across this nation, whether you went to Yale, Harvard, FAMU, or Howard. I was your voice, and, you know, I perform presentations to the General Assembly in New York and the Convention of Governors in California. You know, I had dinner with the Prime Minister of Australia and had opportunity to go over to England and celebrate the Magna Carta with the ABA.
Wow.
And so many different other entities. But the reason I bring it up is because I don't forget, and I don't lose the thought that minorities make up about 6 to 7% of individuals practicing law in this country, and I knew that I would be a minority face representing an entity that looked vastly different than myself.
Yeah.
So I had to think about that approach on how to do that and how to make sure that I was fairly listening to everyone. And I spent a lot of time, Mayor Tomlinson, you know, crafting messages and making sure I was fair and balanced, you know, because the legal world is pretty much conservative.
It's a lot more conservative than it is liberal.
And so when I think about your capacity as mayor and transitioning into a position where, you know, you're now the face of a city that's majority minority, I'm just curious as to, did you spend as much time as I did trying to make sure that your message was balanced and that people were not offended and that nothing I said could be misconstrued or taken to a racist or out of touch level?
Well, I will tell you about that. It's so fascinating that you say that. I had somebody try to stop me from being on Foxy here at Davis Broadcasting because they were scared to death. It was an advisor when I was running the first time. They were scared to death that if I went on what's predominantly African-American radio, urban radio in our community, that I would say something that people would find to be racially offensive. And my response to that person was, look, there's no way that's going to happen because that's not in my heart. It's just not. Mm-hmm. And so it's not in my repertoire of things. I'm not going to, quote, misspeak. If I say something somebody takes offense at, well, you know, then it's just conversation somebody took offense at. But it doesn't come from there. I'll tell you something, Teddy, that's a little, you know, maybe unusual. I've always felt, whether it was the way I was brought up, maybe there's a chip in my brain, I don't know what it is, I've always felt brotherhood of humanity first, right? Calvin Smyre always says that people need to check my family tree because he's not exactly sure where those branches have come and gone from. And who knows? Maybe someday I will take one of those DNA tests. I'm sure there'll be all kinds of surprises in there because I'm sure my folk are from all over the place because that's the way I feel. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the way I feel. And, you know, they say all the time when they're, if you see these commercials on TV about these DNA tests that I think on average African Americans have 20-25% white blood in them, and I'm sure there's an equal percentage for white folk. Right. So I'm just here to tell you, unless you are the Windsors from England, which now frankly they're branching out a little bit, aren't they?
Yes.
You know, it ain't so pure. We're all kind of together on this, and so I've always felt that in my heart and soul. And I just feel like I live that way. Mm-hmm. And so I've always felt connected. You know, that's not to say, you know, I also want to be respectful. You know, kind of the worst thing to see is somebody to go in and pretend they're something else, right?
Right.
So for a white woman to go in and pretend she's, you know, got, yeah, you she's know, actually cool.
About yeah.
Right. to pretend she's cool at all, right? And then that's a problem just to, you know, to speak too crass with white folk, they just ain't as cool. I mean, that's the bottom line. But you got to resign yourself to being the least cool person in the room when you go to these wonderful African American celebrations and and just enjoy it. And that's when I said it's been a joy. It's wonderful. I mean, I can't tell you how it just fills my soul to go and worship an African American AME and CME and other great you know, faith organizations here in Columbus, because I love the spirit of it. And frankly, it's hard sometimes to go back home to your home church, because I'm like, we gotta get it going on here, y'all. We're about to fall asleep. We gotta get it going on.
There is a difference.
You know,
when I was in high school, one of my classmates committed suicide, and he was a young white boy. And so my classmate, in his honor, went to the funeral.
Yeah.
And that was my first experience. You know, worshiping attending any type of service in a primarily Caucasian religious environment. And it was a huge eye opener.
Oh, yeah.
It was a huge eye opener.
Very different.
And I learned from that one experience. And as I experienced more interactions, you learn how to adapt to the culture. Because you don't want to be offensive to anyone else's culture, but you certainly got to respect it. You know, people are not going to do things the way that you do them.
Right.
But if we're willing to listen, if we're willing to just spend 1 minute observing versus critiquing, you know, then maybe we can learn something and truly enjoy it ourselves.
Well, see the joy in how other people are living. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the beauty of it, is to see and experience that joy. So
joy. Well, we are here with Mira Tomlinson having a wonderful conversation. Unfortunately, this will be one of our last conversations with her in the capacity of mayor of Columbus, Georgia. Who knows? She may come back in another capacity. You just never know. But right now, we are reflecting on her almost 8 years leading our city through some very challenging times, as well as some transitions and her mindset. And how did she reach certain decisions and what she carried with her with these decisions. But we'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the state and national level. And, you know, our mayor has been doing quite a few TV interviews with Joy AM and discussions on the radio and other outlets and political outlets. So we're going to see if we can get her open up a little bit for us when we get back. This is Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. We'll be right back.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom. But a little over a year ago, we realized she couldn't take care of herself without our help. And, well, how could I not be there for her? I had no idea how hard it would be, and just what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and, even for me, ways to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics that got me started, but also information about the hurdles I was facing in this new role. I could even connect with experts and hear from others who had been in my place. I know this road we're on isn't an easy one, but I'm really happy to have the extra help for her and for me. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. This message is brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. If you've been listening to our show thus far, we've had an exciting first half conversation with Mayor Teresa Tomlinson, the first female mayor
of
Columbus, Georgia. I mean, she shattered that glass ceiling, and she went straight through it. Didn't crack it. She shattered it. I mean, it came down. And that's a great thing for the city. And I think it's a testimony of a female leadership that we see transpiring all over this state and all over this nation, where women are taking the helm and running with it. And I tell you, you know, I am one African-American male that's absolutely fine with that, because I was raised by two tremendous women, my mom and my grandmother, that taught me so many values and so many great things about life. You know, my grandmother not even finishing high school, Mary Tomlinson, but retiring from Central State Hospital in Milledgeville, and It was about 18 miles away from my old home in Gordon, Georgia. And there was some days she never had a driver's license, never owned a vehicle. Some days she couldn't get a ride. She would leave at 4 o'clock in the morning walking to work.
Isn't that amazing?
But she was determined to do that. And my mom graduated high school. I would see my mom leave the house sometimes with a hard hat because she had to work at the various part-time jobs that she could find. She refused to go on government assistance, not that she thought she was too good for it.
Right.
But she just felt that, you know, if she worked and earned it, she was teaching me something, preparing me for the life. So those two women laid the foundation for me to be the first in my family to go to college. And I went to college and didn't stop going to college.
That's right, right. Degrees, keep learning.
Know, including the JD, you got to keep learning. But what's your reflection of so many women that we see now doing amazing things from a political perspective?
Yeah, you know, somebody asked me the other day, why are all these women just now running? And I will tell you, it's interesting. There's all sorts of research studies out there that women remarkably don't think they're ready to lead or ready to run or be the CEO until they're much further along in their careers. You know, men get out of college, they work for a couple of years, and they think, well, I'm ready to be the CEO of this place. And women, you know, they want to put in the 15 years and you know, have the bona fides to say, hey, buddy, look at my record. Mm-hmm. I can be CEO of this. And so I will tell you, when I started to run for mayor, I was 44 years old. But I didn't want anybody to know until I was 45, because I felt like 45 was a milestone of respectability. I mean, is this not silly? And I mean, come on.
Really?
There's been people that have been, you know, governor before 44. So why in the world? I'd been a successful lawyer. I'd accomplished a lot of things and that I was very proud of, been involved in the community. I had the same record when I was the day before I was 45 as I did the day after I was 45.
Nothing magical happened that day.
But I personified mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. That sort of revelation. And I honestly think that because when Donald Trump became president of the United States, people thought, well, hell, I guess anybody can do it. My French.
No, I think that's accurate.
I mean, just any Joe could be president.
Yeah.
And I think women thought,
don't worry about being honest. Well, yeah, don't worry about being truthful.
I think women thought, well, good Lord, I can do better than that.
Yeah.
And I hear women all the time, I mean, half jokingly, obviously, say, well, I'm going to run for president of the United States, because it's just like, well, good Lord, you know, we can do that. And so I think that,
you know, but it begs the question, you know, to men particularly, you know, it's like we have to be honest here. Women have somewhat allowed men to be in a leadership capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to allow something like that to become president, like,
right.
Damn, have y'all given up?
Right.
Like, you know, what is going on?
You know, sort of like somebody told me, you know, what made you, inspired you to run for mayor and you know, other things. But I said at some point, it's like, good Lord, give me that microphone. You know, geez, give me that microphone. You know, you just can't stand to watch it anymore.
Take the mic.
And so I think that's what's happening, is that women are finally saying, well, gee, I can do that.
And I think you're right. And I certainly endorse everything you're saying here today. And you know, I was looking at the CNN special on RGB, the notorious Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Bader Ginsburg.
Yes, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Thank you, because I was about to chop that off. And she talked about when she graduated law school, that the firm she interviewed for, you know, and with, would tell her, you know, we don't hire women.
Right.
You know, so we can't pretend that there isn't a historical part of this country that has indeed compressed women's ability.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
To be leaders, to take control in companies, to work within the area of law. We've had issues.
Oh, look, let me tell you, it's been doctrinal. It's a legal doctrine called femme covert. It's a French doctrine in Western Europe, and then, of course, was brought over here, which basically said women could not be lawyers. They couldn't be professionals of any sort. They couldn't own land because they inherently genetically, in the view of this particular doctrine, can't tell the difference between fact and fiction. And so it's the same doctrine of, you know, children can't take the stand. Children can't be charged with crimes until they're 7, 8, 9 years old. Different states have different rules. But because you can't cognitively, when you're 4 years old, you can't cognitively discern what is criminal, a criminal act, right?
Yeah.
Well, so this whole doctrine applied to women. Do you know, until the mid-1980s in Texas, a woman could not, by law, be the witness in her own rape trial. She was considered by statute to be incredible. So they could. That's why they couldn't own land, is because they couldn't sign the deeds. That's why they couldn't be lawyers, is they couldn't take the oath of office. And so you had those kinds of societal norms,
yeah,
that were embedded into our legal system, embedded into our ownership and power structure system. And it was a non-starter. Women couldn't do these things because they were deemed not credible or cognitive, you know, having the cognitive ability. And so we have over time blown past that,
uh-huh,
but somehow, you know, there's still some folks around that remember, maybe they don't remember why, they don't know the doctrine I'm talking about, but they just remember that their parents and their grandparents didn't think women should be
right,
doing these things.
Right.
And they oftentimes will ascribe it to politeness and decorum. Right, that a good woman shouldn't be doing these
right
things. A good woman shouldn't be in leadership because it's too aggressive.
And some people have even tried to extend the biblical argument that where it says the man is the head of the household, that, you know, you equate government and companies to being somewhat like households. And the
well, don't forget about Deborah now, because she, you know, she manned 900 chariots of iron, and she,
and
10,000. And troops,
but,
and
you know,
she was a judge.
Yeah, yeah. About Jezebel.
That's right. But Deborah was all right. Now she was tough. I speak at Fort Benning, I always say, well, you know, Deborah was the first woman commanding general. Of course, it took us about 3,000 years to get the next one, but we're moving right along.
Well, it's good that we're moving along, because, you know, and even legally we're moving along, because I remember in law school learning the common law definitions of certain laws like rape, like
yeah,
a husband couldn't rape his own wife, and I thought
yeah,
that was asinine.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But that was the way that we proceeded in life. But it's good to see that we are transitioning and giving equal respect to everyone. Now, if only we can get equal pay to women up to where it
yeah
needs to be.
It will be very, very soon. I think with this rash of elections, frankly,
mm-hmm,
those days are going to be behind us. We're done with arguing about this stuff. It's been ridiculous that we've carried on some of these things as long as we have. It goes back to what you and I were talking about before. We were talking about in the context of race, but when I said that I love to revel in sort of the brotherhood and humanity,
mm-hmm,
well, that's the same thing with gender.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're all people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're all people, regardless of the color of our skin, regardless of our anatomy. We're human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's respect one another wholly. And to the extent we have differences that relate to our personality, our skin, our anatomy, whatever it may be, that just provides us with different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
So why not? You know, why not all come together and govern from these different perspectives and lead?
I saw you talking on social media about, you know, two interesting things that happened here in Georgia. One, here in Randolph County, we had a situation that thankfully was rectified, where they were looking at closing a large number of precincts, primarily in minority communities.
Yes.
And then we had the situation out of Valdosta, where there was a billboard that advertised how people can get involved with pushing to impeach Trump.
Trump, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, going back to the first one, I just saw something recently that stated almost 600,000 people statewide were purged from the voter polls.
Yes, yes.
Why aren't we making a hoop-de-do fuss out of this, considering that the person that committed the act, or at least oversaw that process, is now running for governor?
Yeah,
why
I was.
Is that not an issue?
You know,
there,
a couple things. One, voter suppression is a very real issue. It is a process that people have dressed up to make it look like it's needed, to make it look like they're just wanting better, more thorough process. And somehow it always ends up mm-hmm with certain folks not voting. I would say this. I actually investigated the 600,000, and it's when you look at it. One thing we have to do as people, as leaders, is get the right information so that when we say things, it's indisputable. Mm-hmm. And so when we say 600,000, about half of those are because they literally did move out of state, and so they were rightfully purged. Mm-hmm. Some is because they died and they were rightfully purged. Okay. Some went to prison, lost the right to vote. But whittle it all down, and you still have over 100,000 people who have been, quote, purged from files because they didn't respond to postcards in the mail, because they haven't voted. And what I take great offense at is you have, I believe, a constitutional right to not vote. I think you have a constitutional First Amendment right to say, I don't like either one of those dog candidates. Right. I ain't voting.
I'm not voting.
And forget it. And a referendum, whatever it is, I'm not voting. A pox on all your houses. I think that's a fundamental First Amendment right. And the fact that you know, that we have to use it or lose it is antithetical. We should register once to vote and maintain the right to vote for the rest of our lives, unless by law it's taken away from us for some horrific mm-hmm. reason, but or because we move from the state legitimately. But those rules we can come up with.
You know, when I lived in Florida, going to law school, when you registered for your driver license, they automatically registered you to vote unless you opted out.
Exactly.
Now, I understand here you have to opt in to be
registered. You have registered. To opt in.
But why? And see, that if we're really concerned about people having access to vote and participating in our civic process, why wouldn't we make it as easy as possible for them? And that one would be an automatic registration.
Because you have two points of view. You have one point of view that literally goes back over 100 years, which is only certain people should vote. Yeah. And they usually talk about it in terms of informed voters mm-hmm. and low information voters, mm-hmm. right? And those low information voters, they shouldn't vote. Well, you know, what exactly is a low information voter? Because I'm not sure you, mister, have all the information over here mm-hmm. that's claiming to know who is informed and who's not informed. And so the fact of the matter is, if you are a citizen, when you turn 18, you should have the right to vote. As you said, if you want to opt out and protest, I think you've got that right. But I really would rather you see just you not exercise it. But to me, I understand there are people that will say, well, you know, we have to keep our files up to date to prevent fraud. There have been so many studies, Teddy. I mean, dozens and dozens mm-hmm. and dozens and dozens of studies done mm-hmm. by universities, by nonprofit organizations, by Secretary of States, all over the country, that voter fraud is like it never ever. It's a gnat on an elephant's behind. It never happens.
It never happens.
And when it does, I mean, you know, that's why they've brought forward these couple of cases that are folks that basically have been in prison and didn't have the right to vote until such time as their probation was completed, and they were confused they thought it was once they got out of prison that they were fine. And then they went to vote because they're no longer in prison, and they've regained their life, and they want to vote, which, frankly, I think they should.
I mean, we've been searching for this voter
fraud.
Since Trump became president.
That's just a misunderstanding.
We put millions into it to try to find millions of people that have voted illegally. I mean, if that many folks voted illegally, it would be evident.
It doesn't exist.
You
can say that it does not.
Right.
It's more of what the instance I was talking about where there's confusion. You know, someone thought, we've had a couple instances in this county where people had moved from Talbot County or wherever they lived to Columbus, to Muskogee County, registered to vote in Muskogee County, but because of our weird state laws, it didn't take effect until the next election. Well, of course, they went to where they were registered. They had a little card that said that their precinct was thus and such. They showed up there, they voted, and then found out they voted in the wrong county. They're not a resident of Muskogee County. A few. That's a mistake. Nobody hauled that person off to jail. Mm-hmm. And frankly, that person, the couple I'm thinking of, there were actually three, but they were hugely offended that they were not told that they had to go back back to Talbot County or wherever they came from.
And that shows how outdated our systems are. Because if you move from Talbot County to Muskogee County, even if you don't vote on the local individuals, you should at least be able to vote on state individuals.
Exactly.
Wherever you are.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
should be able to pull it up in the system and see that. So we should have an advanced system
the technology.
Of course the technology. Merrick Thompson, we put a man on the moon and Bill Hoover Dam, the reason people can go to Las Vegas and walk the strip. Don't tell me we can't fix our voting.
Absolutely.
I hate when people make excuses.
It matters who your Secretary of State is, and you better remember that when you go vote. It matters.
And this is the last thing. We're about running out of time. Okay. Man, I wish I had an hour with you.
I tell you.
We're about running out of time, but I want to get your opinion on the billboard thing. When I saw that, the first thing that came to mind to me is freedom of speech. So if someone wants to purchase a billboard and advertise ways in which we could look at or gaining support for impeachment of our president, that is freedom of speech, just the same as it is when we see African-American men in Georgia State Patrol uniforms protecting the Ku Klux Klan as they're on the steps of the state capitol protesting. I don't get mad about that personally, because that's freedom of speech.
Yeah.
Am I missing something?
The only reason that was, and first of all, I agree with you 110%, the only reason there was even a conversation about that, and what happened was a gentleman, a private citizen, went out and got his money from the bank and went and bought a billboard and put up a Let's Impeach Trump, go to letsimpeachtrump.com, right? That's his free speech. He can say anything he wants to. Unfortunately, it was a private billboard company, therefore private property, and the First Amendment only applies to governmental infringement. So what you need to do and to look at in that instance is, have they ever put up any other political speech? Pro-abortion, anti-abortion. Have they ever dealt in political speech before and not taken it down and, abided by their contract? So if they have inconsistent conduct, then they're subject to, of course, civil suit. And that's, I think, where the gentleman was going. He was going to seek his retribution.
Full refund and went and
He didn't want the refund. He wanted the exposure of the statement. And so I think that company, it's so funny because it went national, as you know. So this man has now gotten everybody has been to his website, because he got on CNN. He couldn't have paid for that kind of coverage. When will these small-minded people learn to quit trying to put a sock in it? I mean, it's just, it's information. People have messages. They want to be heard, and you might as well just let them be heard, But by trying to snuff out the message, they bought them national attention.
Merrick Thompson, did the Russians interfere in our election?
Yes, absolutely, they did.
Absolutely.
And I will say, too, I will go a bit further. I think it affected the results.
I think it did as well.
Yes.
And let me ask you this. When we watched our president say on national TV that he don't know Stormy Daniels, he don't know nothing about a deal, he don't know anything, and then come out 2 months later and there are tapes of him talking with his lawyer about how the hush money is going to be paid, is that not lying to the American people?
Oh, well, of course it is. I mean, as they say, the truth is not in him.
How have we proven. How do people who claim to be evangelicals, people who claim to love God, people who claim to be Christians and follow his principle, continue to follow a man that has lied to the people of this country over and over and over and show no respect for common decency or the office of the presidency of the United States?
Well, I will tell you, Apostle Paul warned Timothy to be very, very careful about the church because it was of man. And what's of man may take the word of God and use it for power. Mm-hmm. And so I think you see with a lot of folks who claim to be faith-based leaders using the word of God, religion, and the faithful is for power purposes, not for service. And you see Reverend Barber from North Carolina and some others speaking so eloquently to this, is that be very, very careful of the false prophet, if you will, because those who will take your faith and your commitment and use it as a tool to marshal you for ill, You know, you can read the Bible right side up. You can read it upside down. You can read it front to back. You read it back to front. But if you read the Bible and you think it's a promotional for hate, mm-hmm. you have profoundly missed the point. And so there is no way, that faith and religion can be used as a tool of hate and division. And that is what's happened, I think, somewhere along the line with the moral majority, with some of these movements that maybe started off in earnest. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't there. I wasn't part of them. But maybe they started off, you know, wanting to bind together for good things, but they ended up, frankly, using the faith for power, secular power. And that's really the worst scenario of all.
Yes or no? Will we see Teresa Pike Tomlinson on our ballots in 2020?
Maybe.
Oh, come on! You know, I would get into this, but I gotta go.
It's the show. Thank you.
We, Mayor Thompson, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been an amazing conversation.
Yeah.
I really appreciate everything and all that you've done for this city. We wish you the very
best.
Thank
you, Teddy. It's been a privilege.
You know, anyone that sacrifices 8 years of their life to give to the public and to give back to the people, contrary of whether or not we agree with every decision that you have made, we owe you a bit of gratitude.
Thank you.
And appreciation for what you've done. And I personally feel you've done it amazingly.
Thank you.
So I'm so grateful for being here. This has been Sunday Conversation with Teddy Reese. We have with us today Mayor Teresa LaTomlinson. She, of course, will be passing over the key to the city, the key to City Hall, this January to Mayor-elect Skip Henderson. And we look forward to many things to come with Skip Henderson. We'll have him on soon as well to have a conversation with him. But thank you again, Mayor Tomlinson, and thank you guys for listening. And we look forward to talking with you next Sunday. Bye-bye.
The views and expressions of Sunday Conversations are not the views of Davis Broadcasting Incorporated, advertisers, nor their staff. Do you have questions or concerns or want to be a guest on Sunday Conversation? Come and join me, Teddy Reese. Send me an email at sundayconversations@dbicolumbus.com.